to order for March 13th, and it's 1:30. And first introduce staff to Senate Transportation Dana Owen and Secretary Ann Krickelberg, and the conference operator again today, Claire Gross. And thank you folks for taking care of us. We have Senator Bishop, Vice Chair Senator Dyson, and we will be joined later in the meeting by the other senator.
And the chair is here.
And I'm Chair Senator Dennis Egan. We have three bills up today. We have one bill previously heard, Senate Bill 178. We didn't complete public testimony, the passenger vehicle rental tax, and this is the only committee of referral. And action today, my suggestion is to try to move the bill out of committee. Then we have Senate Bill 94, Rights of Way, from Senator Olson, and presenter will be David Scott. It has a further referral to judiciary, and it's my intention to get the bill out of this committee because we're getting late in the session. And Senate Bill 197, Naturally Occurring Asbestos, and transportation is the only committee of referral, and David Scott will also present for Senator Olson, and we'll see if we can get that bill out of here as well. So, first, Senate Bill 178, Passenger Vehicle Rental Tax, and Brittany Hutchison from Senator Bishop's staff will introduce and adopt a letter of intent, and then we'll take further public testimony. Brittany, welcome.
Thank you. Through the chair, for the record, my name is Brittany Hutchison, staff to Senator Bishop. In front of you today, we have a draft CS for the committee's consideration, and I'll briefly go through the changes. In Section 1, on page 1, line 4, we have consolidated two existing sections regarding the terms recreational and passenger for better organization of the statute. And except for the tax rates, the factors are the same for both types of vehicles. Section 2, page 1, line 10, reduces a term from 90 days to 30 days at which a vehicle is exempt.
Wait a minute. Go slower.
Sorry.
Say it again.
Section 2, page 1, line 10, reduces the rental term at which a vehicle is exempt from 90 days to 30 days. And an extension of the contract is also exempt as long as the extension is agreed upon before the expiration of the initial 30-day period, and there is no break between the initial period and the period of extension. Section 3, page 2, line 6, is again a consolidation of the terms passenger and recreational to better organize the statute. And this section clearly states that passenger vehicles are taxed at a total of 10% of all fees and costs, and recreational vehicles are taxed at 3%. That has not changed from the original statute, just a consolidation of the terms. In Section 4, page 2, line 13, amends the term passenger vehicle to specify that it is for the primary purpose of transporting passengers. This is done to help clarify that the tax applies only to passenger vehicles and not to vehicles that have another purpose. Section 4F on page 2, line 28, reduces the gross vehicle weight from 8,500 to 6,500 pounds in order to better define what size of trucks the legislature intends to be taxed under the statute. Section 5, page 3, line 7, repeals AS 4352, sections 30 and 40. This is done because they are no longer needed since they have already been consolidated in sections 1 and 3. In the original version of Senate Bill 178, had a section regarding retroactivity. With a CS, we do not have that. But to address that issue, we have drafted a letter of intent for the committee's consideration, and I will summarize that letter of intent. The passenger vehicle rental tax should not be applied to Alaskan businesses doing business with other Alaskan businesses. The Department of Revenue should not be collecting the tax retroactively. However, if the department does find that a company has been collecting the tax and not turning it in to the DOR, then the department can go back after that company and collect back taxes with penalties and interest. And as noted in committee at our previous hearing, the legislature passed House Bill 271 in 2003, a passenger vehicle rental tax intended to raise revenue from tourists renting passenger vehicles in order to help pay for the wear and tear that they did to the roads. Since the passage of House Bill 271, AS 4352 has been amended three times, and two of those times were to exempt Alaskan businesses from doing business with other Alaskan businesses.
Okay, Ms. Hutchinson, if you can, we've been joined by Senator Fairclough. Continue.
Mr. Chair, have we adopted the community
sentence? No, I move it.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept as our working document the committee substitute for Senate Bill 178, and that would be the black slash C version.
And I'll object for further discussion.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Again, the intent of Senate Bill 178 is to clarify which rental vehicles are to be covered under the tax and which are not. It is intended that only passenger rental cars, as described in Section 4 of Senate Bill 178, should be taxed under AS 435210. With that, Mr. Chairman, I thank you for your time, and I welcome the questions.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Hutchinson. Questions for the presenter? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm probably behind the power curve here. Is there a fiscal note?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, not yet. Not for the CS.
Okay.
I was told by the Department of Revenue that we will have that once the committee adopts the CS.
We just did.
Okay. So it should be here.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Senator Dyson. Further questions for the presenter? Great, thank you very much. And we did have, we had to end public testimony because of time of the committee, and so we do have an individual on OffNet that wished to testify, Doug Johnson in Ketchikan, and represents Tyler Reynolds.
That's with Tyler Reynolds.
What did I say?
Tyler Reynolds.
Okay, if you can state your name for the record, please, and provide your testimony. You're welcome.
Good afternoon, Chairman Egan and members of the Transportation Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. My name is Doug Johnson. I am the CFO of Tyler Reynolds Incorporated. Tyler has been in business for 25 years and operates from five different locations in Southeast Alaska with 58 Alaskan employees. Our core business is the rental of large equipment to the construction, timber, and mining industries. We do, however, rent half-ton and larger pickups to support contractor needs throughout Southeast Alaska. A large portion of our pickup trucks are for remote mining operations such as the Kensington and Greens Creek mine, which are not on the state highway system.
Yeah, Mr. Johnson, are you still online? No.
Sorry about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Doug, continue. We had a little technical glitch there.
Okay. Tyler just recently became aware of the rental vehicle tax from another Alaska-based equipment rental company. And to my knowledge, we've never received notice of this tax since its inception from the state. We now are aware of this tax, and we have filed our fourth quarter 2013 return to the Department of Revenue. We have paid this tax under protest on the basis that our company was never informed of this tax requirement. This general lack of notice to equipment rental companies and our inability to bill customers for this tax in prior periods is why we would support a revenue clause. I don't know whether the intent to tax the business for the rent.
Mr. Johnson, if you can move closer to the microphone, we're having some technical issues. If you can maybe get close.
Sorry. I do.
Now you're loud and clear.
I do appreciate the opportunity to testify and go on record supporting enactment of this bill in its current form. Thank you very much for your time, and I'd be able to happy to answer any questions you might have.
Great, thanks, Doug. Questions from the committee for Mr. Johnson. Seeing none, thanks for taking the time to testify today.
Thank you.
And we have also on off-net from Anchorage, Rudy Von Emhoff from Delta Leasing. Mr. Von Emhoff, are you still online?
I am online.
Great, thank you. State your name for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Rudy Von Emhoff. I'm with Delta Leasing. We are a equipment leasing company based out of Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. We've got a small office in Anchorage as well. And I wanted to thank Chairman Egan and the Transportation Committee for hearing testimony today. I personally became involved with Delta Leasing in 2007. We are a fairly small company. We've got 28 Alaskan employees. As I mentioned, our primary office and our 95% of our business is conducted in Prudhoe Bay to oil field service contractors generally. And a big chunk of that business is equipment leasing, such as loaders, generators, that type of industrial equipment. Similar to Tyler Reynolds, we do lease half-ton and three-quarter-ton vehicles to our customers who request those. We do not do any business with consumers. We only... our insurance actually limitations only allow us to do business with business entities and obviously primarily Alaskan based business entities. We first became aware of the rental car tax in 2010. We received actually a notification from Department of Revenue advised us of the tax. At the time, we had an exchange of two letters with the Department of Revenue, and in the interest of saving you some of the details, our last letter fulfilled some information. They requested to see a copy of several of our leases, which we sent to them, and we said, please contact us if you have any further questions. We had sent an earlier letter that says we do not feel this tax is applicable to our operations, being that we are in the heavy industrial, rental business for any of our vehicles in Prudhoe Bay and to Alaskan business entities. We never heard back from Department of Revenue after our 2010 letter that we sent them. That was pretty clear. Said, contact us if you have any questions. I'll fast forward 3 years, and November 6th, 2013, we had a criminal search warrant served on our business by the Department of Revenue. That search warrant, ironically, was obtained by a Department of Revenue criminal investigator who had tried to rent a three-quarter ton truck from us. He was denied rental originally, however, then obtained a fictitious business license in a construction posing as a construction entity, and after showing us his business license, he was granted credit with our company, and apparently that transaction enabled him to obtain a search warrant, which is still puzzling to me how that came about, because it was a request for a three-quarter ton truck, which at the time has a gross vehicle weight rating in excess of 8,500 pounds, and even under the existing statute, I understand that as an exempt vehicle class. But irregardless, we had Department of Revenue agents show up at our Anchorage office and simultaneously at our Prudhoe Bay office. Our Prudhoe Bay office, there were, I believe, at least four armed Department of Revenue agents in our office for the majority of the day on November 6th, and basically between the two offices in general, the Department of Revenue confiscated approximately 70 banker's boxes consisting of all of our hard files from our accounting files, as well as our asset files, as well as they also confiscated our computers. So that was the first we'd heard from the Department of Revenue since the 2010 correspondence. And as I'm sure you can probably imagine, that was fairly fairly shocking way to be notified. I guess since that time, we've obviously put a lot of time and attention into looking at this issue. We wrote a letter. I wrote a letter to Commissioner Rodell from Department of Revenue in late December, basically more or less asking them how they can interpret our company being falling under the existing statute for multiple reasons, you know, that even up into the fact that Prudhoe Bay does not have, there's no state-maintained roads in Prudhoe Bay. State maintenance ends at the end of the Dalton Highway, and all of our activities can occur beyond the end of the Dalton Highway. Our customers lease these vehicles for use on their equipment or their oil field exploration sites, which are behind guarded security checkpoints, and there's just no way that this could by any means fall within the realm of a public right-of-way, at least from our opinion and our legal counsel's opinion. Basically, we've had very minimal interaction with the Department of Revenue over the past 4 months. We have more or less written off our computers that were confiscated. It was quite a scramble for a couple weeks trying to keep our business alive without having access, you know, to our electronic records or access to our hard copy paper records. And as I'm sure you can imagine, just the simplest transactions, such as trying to sell a vehicle when you don't have a title for it that you own, is problematic. But it's been a real negative impact to our business, and very consuming from our time. I guess,
Mr. Von Imhoff, if you can start to summarize, please.
You bet. In summary, I could go on. I think that Senate Bill 178 helps clarify the intent of the legislature that the legislature originally had, and I would urge the passage of this bill.
Great. Thank you, Rudy, and thank you very much for providing your testimony. Questions from the committee for Mr. Von Imhoff. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. Does this case have search warrants?
Excuse me?
Did they have search warrants?
That's correct. As I mentioned, the search warrant, they did have a search warrant.
Okay, I got it. How long did it take to get your property back?
We have not received any of our files back or any of our computers back at this point.
Yeah, thank you. Just for the committee's information, public safety police officers regularly have equipment for they can very quickly copy hard drives and get that. And we passed a bill here to get property returned. And also there's clearly in the law that ways for them to copy, acknowledge, exchange, establish the chain of custody and get the property back to citizens. And I'm sorry, I find this very alarming, and I'm sorry you went through it, sir.
Well, I appreciate that, Senator Dice. One clarification is they did not take our Department of Revenue did not take our server. They took the physical computers. We were able to get a few of our critical files back from Department of Revenue, which had all of our clients' credit card numbers on those files. That would just that enabled us just to even continue to do business and charge on that. But that those electronic files for the credit cards, and I think one or two of our key computers is the only thing we've received. Zero on the paper files.
Senator Dyson, follow up. Great, Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, will we have a chance to go into executive session to speak with the administration?
We can sure arrange that. I don't think we can today.
I just would like the Department of Revenue with their attorneys
yes.
In front of the legislature and preferably in executive session.
And speaking of Department of Revenue, Joanna Bills is online just to answer questions if anyone from the committee has a question for Department of Revenue. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, well, I've been around life and this business long enough to know that there's always at least two sides to every story, and I would like to hear the Department of Revenue's take on this specific case.
Okay, thank you, Senator Dyson, and you can make a motion at the end. Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I'll save my question to the end if we have other people waiting to testify.
We have one other that would like to testify. And he's also off net, John Cook and Sam Bryce. And if you can provide very brief testimony, because you provided testimony before, but we will allow you to testify again if you keep it very brief.
Yes, sir. This is John Cook, CFO with Airport Equipment Rentals. I'd like to testify today in support of the CS for Senate Bill 178. I echo many of the comments of the previous testifier with regard to support for the tax. We have not had, thankfully, any criminal action. Two things I'd like to point out that the previous testifier did bring up, which is the current exemption to 8,500 GBW. There's a difference in interpretation between businesses and the department on what that exemption means. The CS would clarify that and put it to bed. The second is that the department has never provided any reason as to why vehicles rented on the North Slope are not defined as passenger vehicles. AS 43.52.099 subsection 2 defines a passenger vehicle as a motor vehicle that's driven on a highway or a public right-of-way. Clearly, activities off the Dalton Highway are not conducted on either of those types of roadways. So we believe this bill will clarify the original intent. It'll clean up some of this ambiguity and disagreement between the private sector doing business with other businesses in Alaska and the Department of Revenue. And thank you for your time today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Cook. Mr. Bryce, if you would like to testify, and please keep it brief because you testified before.
Okay, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Transportation Committee. My name is Sam Robert Bryce. I'm president of Bryce, Inc., 50-year-old Alaskan construction business owned by the Chulista Corp. since 2010. We have up to 60 full-time employees and 200 seasonally. Bryce Equipment Rental is a subsidiary of our company, and it is a small equipment rental company based on the North Slope. A small part of our equipment, heavy equipment rental business is pickup rental to North Slope producers and service companies, as well as our own construction company, mainly in rural Alaska. We received a letter making us aware of the tax in November of this past year, and inviting us to file quarterly tax returns for all quarters back to 2004 in which we had vehicle rental income. We question the applicability of the tax on our use, basically pickups on service roads on the North Slope and with other Alaska businesses. Our liability goes back to 2010, our first year of light vehicle rental, and is approximately $31,000, and we wrote the check so as not to incur further penalties. This bill clarifies the intent, we feel, of the law, and we're in support of the bill. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Cook, and thank you very much for your brevity, and I apologize, but Senator French has been with the committee now for the last two testifiers. And we have no one else that has signed up to testify. Is there anyone in the room that has signed up to testify? Seeing none, Senator Dyson, do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman?
Not for me yet.
Senator French.
If I could ask, Joanna Bales is online?
Yes, she is.
Thank you. Ms. Bales, hi, can you hear me? Joanna Bales?
Yes, I'm here.
Mute button. Yeah, great, great, thanks. It's Hollis French. My question for you is this bill presents a much bigger example of a problem that Representative Holmes and I took on a couple of years ago when we tried to fix the problem of motorcycle rentals here in the state, and we did pass a bill about motorcycle rentals. I'm wondering if you can tell the committee or me how that worked out with respect to back taxes. How did you settle the problem of some of these motorcycle rentals owing back taxes at that time?
For the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the Deputy Director of the Tax Division. Through the Chair, Senator French, we worked with the individual companies, and most of them did pay. We limited the amount of time to go back through an agreement with the Department of Law to capture back taxes from the motorcycle rental companies, but they were required to pay taxes that were due prior to the change.
And you said you limited the amount of time. What did you limit the amount of time to?
Through the chair, Senator French, we frequently have done this type of limiting with taxpayers who've come forward and cooperated with us, and I can't recall if it was 3 or 5 years, but that's our general time frame when we do work with taxpayers and we go back. And all of our tax programs, not even just the example that you've brought forth. So it was either 3 or 5 years in that particular instance.
Okay, and I hesitate to step into pending litigation, so maybe I'll just stop there.
Thank you, Senator French. Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Bales, is there a requirement for us to notify taxpayers when a tax is going to be placed against a business?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, no, there is not. And, in fact, we do not tell corporations that come to Alaska that they're subject to corporate income tax or the multitude of different taxpayers that we have. What we do try to do is whenever there is a new statute that's implemented, a new tax, or even in the case of the motorcycles that were exempt last year, we try to reach out to all companies that we believe could be subject to a tax or be affected by the statute. So we make that attempt, but we also rely on those companies to try to look out for themselves and you know, reach out to any taxing authority or business licensing and that type of thing to try to get information about any regulations, taxes, fees, et cetera, that they might be subject to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Further questions for Ms. Bales? Great. Thank you very much for staying online. Further questions of the presenter from the committee? Senator I'm sorry, Senator Dyson.
Yeah.
No, I was...
Well, hold on one second. I wonder what's on.
Yeah, brief it easy.
Brief it easy. Okay, we're back in Senate Transportation Committee, and is it the intention of the committee to delay the bill till the following Tuesday? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I move we hold this bill to our next meeting Tuesday, our next, and that we require the Department of Law to be here for executive session to discuss this bill.
Oh, Senator, and the Department of Revenue?
Sure. And I suspect what will happen will be Department of Revenue and the member from the Department of Law who pays attention to their business.
Senator Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, I know that we'll have the motion ready, but to talk about the interest of the state. But specifically, we had this is the second constituent, the second Alaskan that came forward and said that the Department of Revenue came in and seized their property. And so I hope that they're prepared to give an update on at least two cases. One was with Delta Leasing, and the other was with Maytech Alaska. We had Orion on 225. We heard from Orion Peterkin. I think that's who it was. And he, I believe he expressed, yeah, armed enforcement on November 6, 2013. So the same date. So it was a coordinated effort. So hopefully we can have some updates specifically on what led to the sequences of events on November 26, 2013.
Thank you, Senator Faircloth. Further discussion? All right, this bill, Senate Bill 178, has been held over till the 18th of March, and we will meet in executive session with the Departments of Revenue and Law, and at the request of Senator Faircloth, update us on some other issues that we are concerned about. That takes care of that. Next is Senate Bill 94, Rights of Way, and presenter David Scott. I don't see Mr. Scott in the room.
It's just out. I see him.
Oh, there he is. and sponsor Senator Olson. It has a further referral to Judiciary, Senate Bill 94, Rights of Way. And we do have people here to testify. As soon as you're done, David, welcome. Mr. Scott, have at it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm David Scott, staff to Senator Olson. The bill in front of the committee is a sponsor substitute for SB 94. The crux of the bill is to offer some I don't want to say protection, but a little, I guess, ease of mind to private landowners who have RS-2477s that goes through their property. RS-2477 is it's a public easement. A public access easement is what it is. So Section 1 deals with it vacates a specific RS-2477, and I'll let there's a member here from OTTA, his name is Joe Bovey, and I'll let him address the reasoning behind that, and I'll go on to the rest of the bill. Section 2 of the bill has several things here. This is where we limit RS-2477s that cross private lands to 60 feet of width, and also to only for the purpose of transportation. We also there's also a section and subsection of Section 2 that would allow the state to perform routine maintenance and repair condition of the RS-2477 and to make necessary improvements to improve or preserve the transportation use of the rights of way. It also requires the state to consult with and gain permission of the private landowner prior to making improvements other than routine maintenance and repair. Allows for mediation if there's a dispute between the private landowner and the state, and it also requires the state to consult with the landowner who owns the underlying land if the right-of-way has been damaged beyond repair and would need to be realigned. Also in that section, you'll see on page 3, line 5, and that just make the committee aware of the AS-0955240 through 0955460. That's eminent domain section of the law. There is a fiscal note attached. It's a zero fiscal note, and so it won't be going to finance, but if it passes, it'll go to Judiciary. And with that, I can answer any other questions. There are some folks online and somebody also in the room here.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Scott. Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I would direct the committee's attention to page 2 of 2 of the fiscal note, where we're advised that the loss of value of these routes to the state would exceed $48.5 million, assuming a base cost of land along public access of $1,000 per acre.
Mr. Chairman,
Scott,
for the record again, David Scott, we're well aware that there's pushback from the administration on this.
Great, thank you. Further questions? Senator Verkloff, follow up.
Mr. Chairman, is there any 2477 access on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline?
Through the chair, Senator Verkloff, I couldn't answer. I have no idea.
Is there any right-of-way 24477 in parks?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, I'm aware of some in the Wrangell-St. Elias Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator. Senator Dyson.
On page 2, the C version, line 14.
I'm looking at a backslash U.
I don't got the latest version.
Okay. I'll keep looking. Mr. Scott, it is backslash C, correct?
Mr. Chairman, I have backslash N.
You, Mr. Chairman, U was our first one that was before us, and C is the sponsor substitute.
What is before us is our working document.
Chairman, I have sponsor substitute. It's backslash C.
Charlie? Mm-hmm. I've got that now.
And that's what we have as our working document.
And Mr. Scott has his the C as well now.
All right, back to my question. Page 2, the C version, line 14. I probably don't understand the context here. It says, before improvements, other than routine maintenance, the state shall consult with and gain permission from the private owner, private landowner. So taken in isolation, that would seem to me, without the permission, it can't go forward. But then I read on down to line 25 and following. It says, if they don't come to agreement, then there's mediation. And I assume if after 60 days, unable, they go to Superior Court. And so seems to me that line 14, I'll explain to me what happens here. I thought this, if you didn't have the agreement of the landowner, things stopped, but obviously it don't. What's going on?
Chair Senator Dyson, I would like to have Mr. Joe Bovey come and answer this question. I think he could shed light on it to help you.
Great. Mr. Bovey, welcome. Your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you, Chairman Egan and members of the committee. My name is Joe Bovey. I'm the Vice President of Land Resources for Otten Incorporated. And following up on Senator Dyson's question, basically what would happen is that without any minor improvements, any major improvements where they would be widening a road, installing bridges, culverts, something outside the 60 feet, notification of the landowner would be is what we're recommending here. But if they couldn't come to terms of agreement when they were working outside the right-of-way, then they would go into, in the event of a dispute, the private landowner estate would go into mediation.
And if I may follow, at the end of mediation, they don't come to agreement, they go to court?
That would be the idea, yes, sir.
All right. Maybe you can explain to me, sir, what the real problem we're solving is here and why this section where that landowner who's unwilling can be forced to do something.
Senator Dyson, through the chair, if it pleases the committee, I had a PowerPoint prepared, and I would be happy to go through that. Maybe it would answer some of your questions.
Is good.
Okay.
Senator Bishop had a question.
I'll let him.
Okay, while you're getting ready, yeah. Senator Bishop.
Okay, while you're getting set, are you ready to roll? Is it loaded and ready to go? Are you got a PowerPoint here?
I've got a PowerPoint, and also I think you have a hard copy also.
I don't.
No,
well,
we
maybe,
don't.
Yeah, maybe I
Why
do.
Don't.
No, mine came from the Department of Resources.
I'll just answer my question real quick while we're getting slides or if they got slides out there or whatever. But I want to talk about the mediator for a second. It says mutually agreeable. Is there a dispute resolution if you can't come to terms on a mediator? I don't see that laid out here.
I'm not sure how that would go, Senator Bishop, through the chair.
Yeah.
Here, Mr. Bowie, continue.
Okay, if it pleases the committee, Mr. Chairman, I'll do my PowerPoint now since you don't have the hard copy.
Okay, we'll take a brief at ease. back on record. Mr. Bovee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If it pleases the committee, this PowerPoint was prepared for a House committee meeting a couple days ago, and I know you're more up to speed and informed with RS-2477 issues, so if it's okay with you, I'll just kind of go through here and just hit in the high points. In some of your previous questions before we took a break, we do have some other testifiers that could answer the questions about the mediation. So just basically, the RS-2477 is an obscure 1866 mining law statute and basically was prepared for the Western states to encourage development and also in Alaska Territory. This is a photograph or a map of what the pre-1971 public lands in Alaska, and you can see it's primarily all federal or state lands with the exception of some homesteads and municipalities. Throughout, most of this was found on the state website, either the DNR Division of PAD. And one of the interesting things here is the word highway was historically used to refer to foot trails, pack trails, sled dog trails, crudely built wagon roads, roads and other corridors for transportation. And primarily from the RS-2477s in the state, and I say primarily, most of them were developed either as Indian trails and converted over to mining trails, and eventually some of the major highways such as the Farmers Loop Road in Fairbanks and DeBar Road in Anchorage. In 1998, the Alaska legislature provided the public's right to use these historic access easements that, and I quote, every effort should be made to minimize the effect on private property owners. And this kind of goes along with what Senator Dyson was speaking about in the previous hearing, that sometimes the intent isn't always reflected in what we do. And I think the intent here from 1998 was that the legislature was advising the agencies and the administrations to try to work with private landowners. Currently in the state of Alaska, there are 669 RS-2477s, as I like, and I gave an example of DeBar Road and Farmers Loop Road. Out of the 669, 142 are located in the Otter region. And here's another public lands map with the RS-2477s crisscrossing the state. And here's another one showing where the public lands and private lands are. The public lands are in the yellow, and the blue is all private land ownership. And the black.
Am I correct in assuming that most of those are native held lands?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, yes, sir, they are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
On the 142 miles of RS-2, on out of lands that contain 402 linear miles of RS-2477 classified roads. Out of that 402 linear miles, if they were 100-foot right-of-way, which the state is encouraging them to be, over 9,000 acres of Otna land would be consumed. Go through this quickly. The red portion on the map is Otna ownership, and the black lines are the RS-2477s on Otna property. And also on Otna lands, it also contains 221 linear miles of 17B easements. The 17B easements were a part of ANCSCA, allowing travel across private land, regional native corporation lands, to public lands on the other side. And out of the 17Bs, there's 520 miles worth of 17Bs that are duplicative of RS-2477s.
Well, Senator Furkloff.
I just have a request for clarification, Mr. Chairman. Under bullet point number two, it says proposed 100-foot right-of-ways. Isn't 100-foot what was the federal government issued, or can you tell me the difference of why you use the word proposed?
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, it's not, there's a real loose definition of these RS-2477s, and I think through this bill and our communication today, is that's what we're trying to do, is define and interpret the regulations. Even today, it's uncertain who has the authority over RS-2477s. Is it the federal government or is it the state government? And we have different law experts, even your own attorney generals 5 or 10 years ago, determined they weren't real sure either.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
On this next slide, this one shows the RS-2477s that are also overlaid with a duplicative 17B easement. And the RS-2477s, as we know, and I think a lot of private land, larger private landowners in the state know, that they're a burden on the underlying landowner. One of the things is that they're not, never really described in a deed or a patent. You don't know whether they're there or not. It's kind of arbitrary to find that out. And so in development phases, these next few photos are photos of RS-2477s. This one's located in Canwell. This is the old access into the Denali National Park. It's also referred to as Windy Creek Trail. This one is north in the Metasta area, south of Tok. This one here is in the Bear Valley area. It accesses BLM property south of Metasta Lake. This one here is the Ewan Lake Trail. It accesses private land, primarily going to be state land, west of the Gulkana River. And this one here is in question from the bill. This is along the Clutina Lake Road, more commonly referred to as the Brenwick Craig Road, or as cataloged as RST number 633. And this is quite common with more highly used trails because they're unregulated. There's very little management that the state finds responsible for. This is another photograph of the Clutina Lake Trail. It's approximately about 14 miles up the trail. It's not exactly in the best location, and that's common with a lot of these trails or roads or highways or however you want to describe them, is that they were basically constructed as the shortest point between point A and point B. Here's another portion of this. This was done in 2013, some sloughing off of the bank. So what happens is the general public, you know, is ready to move. They have to go up and things like that, so they just kind of carve out another trail going around the slough off here or the wet areas and things like that. This is another trail between the Nebesna and Copper River Trail. We do have some solutions. We don't only come with the problems and the issues, but we also have solutions. And that's why we would like to propose to limit the scope of use of RS-2477s to transportation purposes only across private lands. Once it's on public lands, if you want to build a campground or campsite, boat launches, that sort of thing, you know, that's great. We encourage, you know, development. And then limit the physical width of the right-of-way to the established or historical use of the route. And again, one of your assistant attorney generals had a review, and it's even on your state website, that his understanding that these trails, these highways, roads, whatever you want to call them, would be defined with the historical use of the previous, whether they're 25 feet or 10 feet or maybe even 150 feet on some of the state highways. Limit the state's authority to maintain, repair, and improve the right-of-way. And that would be conditional because with whatever you could, the state would still have the authority to do the maintenance within the 60-foot right-of-way, but anything out that, we would like to have permission from the underlying private landowner. This is a good conditioned, well-maintained RS-2477 trail. This is commonly referred to as a Yannert Trail. It's north of Cantwell, south of Healy, and we are in a discussion, or we have approval with the state to realign this route to get it away from a active material site and also develop a parking area along the park's highway at mile 228.
Mr. Chair, a question on that last slide.
I'm sorry, Senator French.
Thank you. Who pays to maintain that?
That one there, it also serves as an access for Golden Valley Electric Association. So with our agreement with Golden Valley Electric, when they go in there, you know, they'll backplate and things like that. Primarily, this trail is used only for, like, hunting, for horse travel and things like that, and light-use ATV, so it doesn't get a lot of heavy use.
But as far as the payment, I mean, it's a well-maintained road, the maintenance is paid for by Golden Valley, or just... I mean, it doesn't maintain itself, or does it?
Senator French, through the chair, no, there's, and that's another thing with establishing all these RS-2477s, there's no management plan there, there's no money, and from my conversations with different DOT officials, it's always harder to come up with funds and budget items like that, so this is another consideration. Across the state of Alaska, DOT representative told me just after my House hearing is that there's 10,000 miles of RS-2477s across the state on private land, and there's no management plan to develop them, to maintain them, to construct them, and to put up signage and things like that. So it's something we'd like to consider, too.
Is it fair to say you don't know who pays to maintain that road?
Senator French, through chair, no, sir, there's no maintenance funds there at all. Occasionally the BLM, because this is a duplicative one, this is also identified as an RS-2477, but it's also a 17B trail. For the most part, local people come in there and just try to, you know, do what they can and things like that to keep people out of their, you know, the better the condition of the road or the trail, the less trespass you have off in it.
It's a group effort.
Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The B-17 I'm not familiar with, so you said on the on this one, this particular slide, that it's a B-17 and a 2477, RS-2477. So can you tell me the BS-17, I hear you infer that that means it's BLM property. Is that what a B or a 17B is?
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, 17B is the provision that anchors of Section 17, subparts B, that provides a federal easement across private ANCSCA land from public land to public land. So they're only specifically used for ANCSCA Native Corporation lands. Just to continue on, most of the trails, or about half the trails that we have that are considered RS-2477s, also have the duplicative 17B on top of them or underneath or whatever you say want to call it. But anyway, for in this instance, the owner of that trail is technically Otten Incorporated. BLM, through the federal government, they're supposed to allocate funds to maintain these, which they haven't. So just a word of caution, if the state exerts a lot of these RS-2477s across the state, 10,000 miles worth or 100 miles worth, somebody's going to be responsible for maintaining those roads. And I'm assuming since the state would take development, construction, alignment of these roads, that eventually the state would be on the hook to pay.
Senator Bishop, that's a question.
I'm sorry. Follow up. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe, is this, I want to go back to, I can't remember because I just glanced in the 17B section. There was one of the bullets that said some of these 2477s or 17Bs had a 3-foot right away because they were a walking trail. What on one of these, they're right there, i.e., limit the physical width of the row to the established historical use, but in no event shall the width exceed 60 feet, i.e., if the route was a 3-foot wide walking trail, it should stay 3 feet wide. So do we know if there's, how many of those have been identified as 3-foot wide walking trails? Do we know any of that?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, we have not, because I think the state is asserting that they're all 100 feet. I'm not aware of any time that they asserted less than 100 feet.
Okay.
Please, committee, I'll continue on. And one of the things is here, with our stakeholder coordination required to reach solutions, we signed an MOU with the Department of Transportation, Department of Fish and Game, and the DNR last year. And part of the conditions of the MOU is that we would meet quarterly. And these are just the things that we'd like to identify, talk through, and discuss, because there's a lot of issues out there. And I think we can resolve most of the issues by, you know, face-to-face table talk and things like that and get it done instead of trying to go to court or come to here every time we have a problem through the legislature. And I just wanted to say before closing here is OTNA is pro-development. We're not trying to stop any kind of development in our region. We're involved with timber, mineral exploration, mining, logging, and that sort of thing. So we're not trying to stop development. We're just trying to do it in a sustainable, good stewardship fashion. And I would just like to say, too, is that I appreciate your time, and there's some other experts online. But in closing, before I sign off here, is that specifically the Clatina Lake Road that travels up from the Richardson Highway to the head of the Clatina Lake there. It not only crosses Otna property for about 22 miles, it also crosses private non-ANCSA property owners in there, which is impacted greatly too. So it's not just a native Alaska Native Corporation deal. I mean, there's private property landowners that aren't part of ANCSA or natives that it's going to impact greatly too. And I think it's just something that I guess if you build it, they'll come kind of an attitude. And I think there's been circumstances around the state for developing our natural resources and places to recreate, which are good, but there's no management plan in place to what to do when the people come there. How are we going to take care of the trash? And what are we going to do if there's fire started and things like that? So it's just good to have this discussion now instead of just having a carte blanche that we can have 10,000 miles of RS-2477s running across the state.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bishop.
I understand what you're saying, and I completely understand what you're saying. You know, fall time we get inundated. You know, everybody thinks their little piece of property is their own backyard. You know, and especially when it comes to hunting sites and 2477 trails and the like. And when you get 30 or 40 people in a 20 concentrated mile area, and there's no facilities for trash, I understand that because I see it every year, and so I get it on the management plan, and I can sympathize with that.
You have a thought? Reply. You understand? Okay. Great. We do have people that are online to testify. We also, I believe, have folks in the audience to testify, and we're going to try to keep it brief. Mr. Scott, obviously we're not going to hear your next bill, but we'll bring it back. Okay, thank you, David. Is Eric Helms in the audience? Is Eric Helms available?
Yes, sir. My name is...
Oh, you're online. Okay, yeah, I thought you were in the audience. Okay. Eric, name and record, or name for the record, and provide your testimony, please.
Yes, my full name is George Eric Helms. I happen to be one of the private property owners that was mentioned previously that is affected by this bill. First of all, I just wanted to say I certainly do support the bill in its current version. As a private property holder up there when the state exerted these rights, they kind of picked the route. They didn't give the property owners any say. The exertion of the 100-foot route will actually encompass man-made development that currently exists, including cabins, sheds, decks that are used for tents, etc. This bill would help limit the use of that to just strictly transportation. As this has been opened up, we have suffered some losses on properties, break-ins, malicious behavior, that sort of thing. It's somewhat difficult to understand when you look at the laws and everything that's written about the 2477, how they came and what their purposes were, and yet what we're receiving from the state, who's taken a very heavy-handed approach, both DOT, DNR, is... this is our land, and we can use it any way we want. The second thing that we're now hearing is they're going to not only take these 2477 routes, they're looking at arterials or the potential for. So any other trail that's been built off of these trails could potentially now be taken as well. For those reasons, I certainly do support this legislation, and I thank the committee for the chance to speak today. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Helms. Questions for Mr. Helms from the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much for sticking around and testifying. And next to testify is Nicole Barolio, I hope I pronounced that correctly. She's with AFN in Anchorage. Nicole, welcome to the committee and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Nicole Barolio. For the record, I am the General Counsel for the Alaska Federation of Natives. I'm testifying today on behalf of AFN in support of SB 94. As you've heard, SB 94 generally seeks to remedy the effects of RS 247, which, as Mr. Bovey mentioned, is an opaque civil rights era federal law that really threatens to thwart the effective management of much of Alaska's lands. Due to several uncertainties, including which rights of way were accepted prior to the Act's repeal and what limits were placed on those rights of way prior to the repeal as well. The remedy for SB 94, as you have heard, is to narrow the width of the rights of ways, to confine the use to transportation and emergency purposes, and to redefine the state's authority to maintain, repair, and improve these rights of ways. There are thousands of linear miles of rights-of-ways all throughout the state, and this has become a considerable problem for private landowners. if and believes that the limitations are both reasonable and necessary, and more importantly, that it will strike an even balance between the rights of private landowners and against public users of the rights of way. Thank you very much. If there's any questions I can answer, please let me know.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Romeo. Questions for Aetna Council? Seeing none, thank you very much for presenting your testimony. We have Randall Malden at the Anchorage LIO. Mr. Malden, if you can give your name for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
My name is Randall Malden. I'm a private property owner on Clukina Road. I support the bill. If they were to widen access along the lake, it would almost take out several of our cabins and campsites and whatever. I think the road never came as far as we are. It stopped at what was called the boys' camp, and then the local people, as they went to their recreational places, kind of punched the trail in and where we could drive our truck up and bring materials in. We've had problems with vandalism. I lost stuff. And since we have put a gate on the road, which we had to open up here last year, when we put a gate on the road, all that stuff stopped because people just couldn't come in and load up and leave. But there's an easement that runs around this small parcel of private landowners that if the state wanted to make a small trail like for ATV width or something, because that's how we go in, they could go up, come around, and come right back on the other end of our parcels and be on, and not be driving right through our person property. Other than that, I think that's all I've got to say. I don't want to see a road go through my yard.
Great. Thank you for providing testimony, Mr. Malden. Questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much for taking the time to testify. Is there anyone at any LIO or off-net that wants to provide testimony? Left. And I think we got you all, and thank you very much for taking the time. We do have, I don't know how this happened, but we have Kent Sullivan from the Department of Law. Kent's available for questions, and he's in Kona.
Well, we should abuse him.
We'll trade.
Sorry.
Mr. Sullivan, are you still online?
I am.
Okay, we have we have four members that would like to abuse you. Questions for Mr. Sullivan.
I'll start. Hi, Senator Mr. French. Sullivan. Sorry to interrupt your vacation. Can you just tell me, I assume we'd hear from Department of Transportation, but maybe you can just tell me whether the administration supports this bill or not.
Senator French, through the chair, my name is Kent Sullivan. I'm an assistant attorney general with State of Alaska Department of Law and Natural Resources Section. I'm the state's attorney that generally handles RS-2477 matters. And to the best of my knowledge, at present, the Department of Administration has not taking a position on the bill. Department of Law, however, does have some concerns with the bill overall and how it works and the effects that it would do. But to the best of my knowledge, the administration has not yet taken a position.
While we've got you, go ahead and give us your concerns or the department's concerns. I know your concerns are probably different.
I guess one of the issues with this bill is the effect that it would have on the state's RS-2477 rights. This bill attempts to very narrowly tailor the scope of rights that the state already possesses. If you think of an RS-2477 right-of-way as a conglomeration of rights that create the right-of-way, and they're made up of many, many different parts, including width, including scope, the modes of transportation that can be used, the types of activities that can occur within the right-of-way, the rights that the state has to make improvements and perform maintenance and those types of things. All of those things are separate sticks in a big bundle of sticks. And effectively what this bill would do would be to strip away many, many, many of those sticks from that bundle of rights that the state currently possesses. And it would essentially result in a massive giveaway of state property interests on an unprecedented scale, and that's part of the reason the fiscal note is what it is. And please be mindful that the fiscal note, alluding to the $48 million worth of property interest that the state would give away by way of this bill, is only as to the narrowing of the width of the right-of-way. In other words, that $48 million is simply the changing or limiting the scope of RS-2477 right-of-ways in the state of Alaska from generally 100 feet in width down to 60 feet in width. That $48 million is representative of that alone. It does not take into consideration all the impacts to the state financially of reducing the scope of use. One of the things that this bill does is it says that these rights of way cannot be, they're frozen in place as what they were at the time that RS-2477 was repealed in 1976. So therefore, if you have right-of-ways across the state that have not yet been developed, which a very high percentage of right-of-ways in the state would qualify in that way, that would mean that they never could be developed any more than they were in 1976. So a footpath that existed in 1976 will always be a footpath. To the extent that DeBar Road and Farmers Loop Road, they're frozen in place as they were in 1976. The Dalton Highway is an RS-2477. It's frozen in place as to what can be done and the way that it's shaped and the way that it's been maintained and the uses that can occur on it as of 1976. And that's a huge, huge, huge impact to the state's property rights, and it has a tremendous fiscal impact. And so that's a very big concern. One of the other things that this bill does is it provides that the state, to the extent that it needs to, have a broader scope with regard to its rights away than this bill makes them. The state would be forced to buy that broadened scope back through condemnation. So effectively what the state would do is it would be forced to buy back that which it presently possesses. And again, the concern is, why would the state want to do that? Why would it want to give away something that it now holds?
I apologize, Mr. Sullivan, are you still on?
That's the NSA tap.
Yeah.
Sun alert.
I'm really assuming that they were really interested in that. Mr. Sullivan, trying again, are you online? Well, I apologize. Oh, you are back, okay. We apologize. We had some communications issues, but continue.
Yes, another issue with the bill is a recent decision by Judge Beislein that basically has indicated that the state cannot invoke condemnation proceedings against Native corporations or against Native allotments in the state of Alaska right now, that there's no court jurisdiction to do that. So essentially this bill creates a mechanism for the state to buy back the condemnation things that it would give away by way of this bill, but it could not do that as to Native corporations and Native allotment owners, and so it creates a mechanism that the state couldn't legally invoke according to current state law and Judge Beislein in the recent decision that he issued. So that's another concern that the state has. Finally, with regard to the Kutsuma Lake litigation, this bill seeks to basically do away with the state's rights and defenses, but it's asserted an ongoing active litigation against Aetna Corporation over Coutinho Lake Road. This bill seeks to circumvent that litigation and the legal positions that the state has taken, and that obviously is problematic from the state's perspective. The bill basically tries to make RS-2477s in Alaska synonymous with 17B easements, and they're very, very, very different. The federal government holds, owns, and possesses 17B easements. The state of Alaska owns, controls, and manages RS-2477 easements. RS-2477s are much broader than in scope than 17B easements. And so essentially, by saying that as to Coutinho Lake Road, you would eliminate RS-2477s where it overlaps a 17B, you would create a patchwork all along the road of 17B easements and RS-2477 easements, which are two very different legal animals and have very different rights and responsibilities, and it would be extremely unworkable. The other problem with Coutinho Lake Road is, under the bill, the only thing that you could do in access upon Coutinho Lake Road is ingress and egress. You could not launch boats from the easement. You could not camp along the easement. You could not do all the things that the public is currently doing in recreating and using that right-of-way right now. And essentially, as to Coutinho Lake Road, it would make that right-of-way practically unusable, because those are the things that are being done along that right-of-way. That's why that right-of-way is important. It takes almost 3 hours to get from the bottom of that road on the Richardson Highway up to Coutinho Lake. And if you couldn't stop along there, and if you couldn't have day use sites, and if you couldn't occasionally camp and do those sorts of things, park your vehicle and what have you, it would make that right-of-way practically unusable and a very low utility. And so, again, that's a concern. So there's many, many concerns with this bill, and I'd be happy to get into more detail with the committee at any point that you might wish.
Yeah, it's not the thanks, Mr. Sullivan. It's not the committee's intent to move this bill. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sullivan, do you have a white paper written on this bill, or I don't think it's an opinion, but comments that we could have in writing for the committee on the points that you've listed? I was writing as quickly as I could. You covered four different major areas. I captured on the first one the effects of our rights and the conglomeration of those rights as with scope and modes of transportation, but I believe there was a fourth one that you said during that. So is there a possibility of getting those concerns in writing so that we could make sure that we attach them to the legislation?
Absolutely, yes. And again, I apologize for being away and not being there in person, but certainly as soon as I return, I'm sure that's something that we could do.
Follow-up, Ms. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I truly appreciate you calling in. I hope that you're in a position of pleasure and that there's not other reasons that have taken you away from the state, but I appreciate you calling in with your comments.
Great. Thank you, Senator Fairclough. Oops, sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Sullivan.
My pleasure. I'm happy to. Thank you.
Okay, don't leave yet, though. Senator Bishop has a question.
I don't have a question for you, sir. I just got a comment. I'm going back to the fiscal note and the $48 million. And it's just a comment. I find it this $1,000 an acre determination, I find it a little troubling, if you will. I know some people that the state has bought property for road construction and highway and airport construction, and they didn't receive $1,000 an acre.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator French, you have a question? Senator Fairclough, further question? It's my intent, with your permission, to end this meeting, and we will delay Senate Bill 197 until next week. It'll probably be Thursday of next week, and we will continue discussion on Senate Bill 94. Mr. Scott, thank you very much for presenting, and if there were folks from DOT here waiting for Senate Bill 197, I apologize, but We'll see you next Thursday. And our Dana Owen of Transportation staff will let everybody know what it is. Nothing further. Meeting's adjourned.